Well, it's definitely an uphill battle. I mean, I think right now, I believe I read somewhere within the last year that the average lifespan of a teacher is only 3 years now. You know, the public doesn't realize this. The public doesn't realize that teachers are getting hammered in the classroom on every end because teachers feel helpless. You know, they feel like they've been any ability they have to make any change and to do really good work is being like taken away from them. They're being boxed in and handcuffed. And I think that that's a big problem that our educational systems have. And there's no easy solution for this.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 136 with author, speaker, and high school teacher, Daniel Blanchard.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston. Happy Thanksgiving, or if you're an international listener, happy Thursday. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Thank you for joining me today. Again, this week here in the States, we are indeed celebrating Thanksgiving. Lots of people traveling around the country to be with their family for today and, you know, potentially the weekend. And if you're a student, then there's a good chance you've had a good part of the week off to do just that. You know, when I was going to Purdue, we'd have the Wednesday off before Thanksgiving to go really, you know, when I was going to Purdue, we'd have the Wednesday off before Thanksgiving to go to wherever we're really going. But when I was going to high school, you had to take a day off to get to where you're going. And since I was aiming to have perfect attendance each year, especially since, you know, it was rewarded by having awesome parking space, traveling for the holidays wasn't something that was really on my to-do list. And today, I'm not so sure how public schools handle that because a lot of things have definitely changed since I was in high school. And in fact, that's what we're going to be talking about today with today's guest, Dan Blanchard. After starting his career in teaching 20 years ago, he has since realized that a lot of things that many of us have taken for granted in our youth are kind of an afterthought in today's educational space. And with the focus being on standardized testing, you know, it seems that the bottom line is much more important than the individual student these days. So in today's conversation, we'll be discussing where Dan sees himself as a classroom teacher, the willingness of schools to do more for their students, and where he got the inspiration to become an author. Before we get to that, just want to remind you guys about Fizzle. And, you know, when it comes to education, I think the most useful education I had was, you know, that I was able to apply to things I thought were necessary or enjoyed doing. So when I was in high school, I really enjoyed my time in band and my other electives. And then when I was in college, I really enjoyed studying organizational leadership and being part of several student organizations. But after graduation, though, education was something that I had to start seeking and working on my own time. And I noticed that I really gravitated towards learning about online entrepreneurship. And, you know, the thing was, though, is that as the years have gone by, there's been so many people introduced into the space that it's hard to keep track of what people do, the courses that are out there, and if they're good or bad or whatever. And so when I back in 2015, I found Fizzle when I was rebooting New Inceptions, and I thought, wow, every online entrepreneur should know about this site. And the main reason I say that is because of the education that they offer. And I hadn't seen anything like it until that point, and really I hadn't seen anything like it since. Not only do you get courses in all kinds of topics, including how to choose your own topic if you don't even have one, but there's a great supportive community there that they're all wanting to support you as you all grow together. And don't forget about the regular coaching that they provide to all their members on a weekly basis. Add on to the fact that they also have this newly added bonus of having a free WordPress hosting for all their members. It just makes sense to become a member if you're beginning your online business. So get started today by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Get a free month. And again, that's newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. All right. Don't forget to subscribe and comment on the show on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. It really helps other people find the show so that they can find work that matters to them. And as usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/136. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, your host. Hope you're having an awesome week. Lots of cool things happening for yours truly. One thing that I really wanted to note is that my personal mission guide is finally available. It's the result of several months of organizing my thoughts and, you know, what it takes to find a business that is meaningful to what interests you. And you can find it at newinceptions.com/personal-mission-guide. Speaking of personal missions, today I have on with me someone who has made it his own mission to help students find what makes them tick. He is a best-selling author, award-winning speaker, and educator, and as well as two-time junior Olympian wrestler himself and a two-time junior Olympian wrestling coach who grew up as a student athlete. On top of that, he also has 7 degrees and is a double veteran of the Army and Air Force. You know, I'm a very big pro-veteran kind of guy. And with this background, he feels that it is his duty to positively influence youth any chance that he gets. So besides being a teacher in Connecticut's largest inner city high school, he has also written books on team leadership as well as academic books that help with the subject as well. Today, I'm here with Dan Blanchard, who can be found on the web at danblanchard.net. And thanks for spending some time with me today, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, JC, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. And it makes me all warm inside knowing that you're a big fan of the veterans, you know, our military and our educational system.
Yeah.
You know, both are very, very important, obviously.
Yeah. My wife's 16 years National Guard, and currently, in fact, while we're recording this, which is why I can record it on a Saturday, that's where she's at, doing her weekend commitment. And that's
God,
fun. And
God bless her.
And then you got the educational background that I'm part of, as well as my mom was a part of, but we'll get into that later into the conversation. But going back to you, lots of different things to unravel here. And one thing that really sticks out to me is that you say that you were more of an athlete than a student. And
no doubt.
Personally, yeah. Me coming from a small town, you know, I remember how big sports really were. You know, I remember a lot of, you know, parents pushing their kids to excel at them. And sometimes that was good, sometimes it was bad. But, mm-hmm. you know, personally in high school, I was more of a 4-H and a band guy. But there again, you have parents pushing their kids to crazy extents and whatever was, you know, working with animals or sending them to competitions. It was just like, this is your thing. I'm serious about this. And, you know, it was just a lot of competition back there, which I think really built a lot of character. Today, you don't see that quite as much because I think you see more focus on the classroom. But mm-hmm. what do you remember of your high school days when you were growing up?
Well, I'm with you, JC. It's very, very different today. And I got to tell you, my son, he's a 14-year-old freshman. And today I brought him to the gym. There was some weights with me, and it was the first time, you know, he's ever gone. Mm. And I told him, you know, how it was in the old days. You know, you were in those old muscle-pumping, iron-pumping gyms with the metal weights clinging and people screaming at you.
And AC/DC, you know, in the background.
Yeah, exactly. AC/DC, Black Sabbath.
Yep.
You know, playing in the background. And your weightlifting partners, and there was always a few of you. You know, they were screaming at you to do two more. And then once you did two more, it was like, okay, now three more, you know. So it was very, very different back then. Like, just even the sounds in a gym mm-hmm. were very different. You know, today you go into a gym and you don't even have metal weights. You got like those rubber weights. There's no clanking. There's no sound. There's no like sounds of intensity is what I was trying to explain to my son. You know, if you were screaming and hollering and hooting at your partner to do five more reps or whatever it was, you might be asked to leave the gym because you're disturbing the peace or whatever it is. So yeah, things are very, very different. Things were so much more competitive back then. I mean, I remember JC when I was playing football and, you know, I can remember the fathers, you know, we were like just 8-9 year old boys. And I can remember the fathers screaming when we were doing like a goal line stand, you know, the fathers are screaming to like dig in and all that stuff. You know, today, like I go to my daughter's soccer games, or I remember going to some of my son's basketball games and football games, and you know, they got like this silent sideline thing.
yeah.
It's like I almost don't know what to do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, totally.
I stand there and I'm like, really? I'm like, you know, like where's like the intensity? Where's the competition, the competitiveness? Mm-hmm. Because I've always, JC, equated it to sports was your safe place to like dig in and give all you had. Because if you lost, the consequences weren't that big of a deal. But now we go off into like the real world. You know, let's say we're in high school or whatever, getting ready to graduate high school. And you go out in the real world, JC, and you have never had to like dig in.
Right.
And you've never had to face, you know, let's say minor consequences of, let's say, an L in the column instead of a W. And you go out in the real world and you got to like buy a house or start a business or something like that. And there's, you know, raise a family. There's much bigger consequences there.
Right.
And you've never had to, you know, in today's age, it seems like you've never had to really face consequences and face like tough times on a small scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We, you know, when the penalty was small.
Right.
And now the penalty's big, you know?
Yeah.
You may be trying to raise a family or buy a business or start, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that you were bringing up was, you know, the fire on the sidelines and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I did play football from like Pee Wee, which I don't even know if they do Pee Wee anymore, because I was walking by my old Pee Wee field the other day and I noticed they were all doing flag football. I'm like, what is that? What is this?
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I hear you.
And as I was, you know, growing up, I went into junior high and then I was in high school football. My high school football team wasn't necessarily as good as our band team. So in my senior year, I went full band as opposed to the football team. But during the entire time, man, you're right, is that it was so highly competitive. And, you know, I would say that because I was at a smaller school, and I think a lot of small school students, athletes can say this, is that you do kind of become somewhat of a hybrid, and you kind of tend to lean, at least it used to be, tend to lean to what drives you and what you have passion for. But, you know, kind of going back to what you're talking about, you just don't see that nearly as much. You don't see that capability, at least in what I've been able to see from the sideline myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're right, Jason. You don't see it. And like I say, you know, you don't really hear it or feel it.
So what came first for you, college or joining the military?
Oh, I was in the military first, and I got to tell you, that made a difference for me. Let me tell you, JC, let me back up. Two things made a difference for me, and actually more than that, but I'll just keep it simple. A couple of things that just jumped right at me that made a difference for me was that my junior year in the summer, I was wrestling in the Junior Olympics, you know, which was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wasn't wrestling in the Junior Olympics, I was working for a moving company. And I was working like anywhere between 60 to 90 hours a week. When I was in the Junior Olympics, you know, I learned how to be super, super intense during that time. And when I wasn't wrestling in the Junior Olympics or training, and I was working at a moving company 60 to 90 hours a week, I was learning, you know, what I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was looking around at these full-grown men, you know, living that kind of life, and, you know, they kept asking me, they were like, what college I was in, you know, and I told them I was just a high school kid, and they were like, oh my gosh, you're way too young to be here. You know, like, this is like more of a college kid's job. You shouldn't be here. You know, you should be off like enjoying your summer, this and that. So like, I learned at a very early age, you know, how to work hard between, I mean, 10 years old, I had a newspaper room. Harford Current every morning before school. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I had that moving company job and then the Junior Olympics. And then, like I said, I was never really a good student. I was a C student. And that's all you really needed to play sports. And that's, you know, that's where my head and heart was, in the sports. And then, you know, after high school, you know, I was pretty much already signed up, like during high school, to go to the Army. So after high school, I went right to the Army. And, you know, and I did a lot more like difficult and challenging and hard things. Mm-hmm. So when I was done with all of that, between the, you know, all those experiences of doing hard things, sports, including with the military, obviously, when I did get to college, I went to Manchester Community College here in Connecticut because I didn't have the grades or the test scores to get into a real college. But I got to tell you that the work habit was there. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to suck it up and work hard was already built into me. And now all I had to do was just switch gears a little bit and just kind of slide it over, transition it over into the academic world or the college world.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, JC, it was easy. It was easy because like the character was already there. The habits were already there.
Right. Okay.
So, and so I went to Manchester Community College. I got straight A's.
Yeah.
And
well,
wow.
That's awesome. I mean, considering that you were struggling so much in high school and then to be able to turn around after your military experience to be able to flip the switch and convert it over. Because I remember for me moving from high school, which I didn't have to study that much, you know, and I would just like maybe do the homework halfway watching TV when I got home and really not even really learn to know how to cram and how much that hurt me when I first got to college. You know, I think that can be almost transferred to, you know, you were talking about how you grew up having the different jobs and how that prepared you to be in the military. Kids don't even have that. They don't even have summer jobs these days, you know, and it's just like they just spend all their time in front of their little gadgets or whatever, and it's just crazy, you know, to think about how much has changed.
You know, JC, me and my son had this conversation, very interesting conversation a couple months ago, and he's so gifted, you know, athletically and academically, and now, you know, sometimes I can only just dream to be as gifted as him, but the bad side of that, the curse of that, is that he never had to try hard. So you know, we were out on the track, and I was timing him on the track, you know, 7 months ago. And he says to me, he says, "Dad," he says, "what happened? Because I used to be so much faster than everybody else." And he goes, "and now they're starting to catch up to me." And I said, I go, "you know, Dakota, I've been waiting years for you to ask me that question because I've been trying to explain this to you for years and you haven't been ready to hear it." Mm. And I go, "and whenever I try to explain it to you, how your life is too easy, more or less, you know, you always kind of tune me out and say, nah, like I know what I'm doing, you know, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "so now for the first time in your life, you're ready to listen to what I have to say." And I go, "and this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that, listen, your father was born with a curse that he turned into a blessing." And I said, "you were born with a blessing that if you're not careful, it's going to become a curse."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I was always the skinny little runt, the weakling, the slow kid, the kid that, you know, struggled in school, didn't do bad. You know, the kid that grew up in a dysfunctional, violent home, violent neighborhood, you know, had to face reverse discrimination all the time because of where I was living, because I was white, you know, and I go, and I was the one that had to learn from a very, very early age that I had to suck it up all the time and nobody was going to do anything for me. And I said, "and here you are." I said, "you're born without just this athletic gift, you know, and this intellectual gift. And everything's come so easy for you that it's slowly turning into a curse because you've never had to work. And whenever I try to tell you to work, you know, whenever I try to tell you to run for real, you know, you just laugh at me and say, I am. Or I try to tell you to study for real, you know, you laugh at me and say, I am. Or I try to give you advice and you say, Dad, I know, leave me alone, I know. And the thing is, no, you don't know because you're not doing it. Mm. You know, you don't know, you need to listen. And I'm like, and you couldn't listen until you saw other kids starting to catch up with you. Mm. I said, so now you see the curse developing. And I said, that's JC, that's kind of where a lot of care kids are today, because we're just so easy on them. Mm. We do everything for them. And the thing is, just the way society's set up, the way our institutions are set up, you know, whether it's our educational institutions or even our law institutions, yeah, you know, the way everything is set up is that it's set up that way. You know, it's hard for us to like force a kid to do anything these days, or to get a kid to suck it up, because one, the kid's never done it and they don't want to do it. You know, if you push them in the educational realm or in the sports realm, you know, you're going to have maybe your administrator or the president of the sports league or the parent or somebody complaining, maybe even the law, you know, complaining, you know? So it's very, very hard today to give kids what they really, really need. And listen, I grew up, JC, in that rough, rough environment. And I know that, you know, perhaps it was a little too much and the pendulum needed to swing a little bit more back to the center. But now it's gone too far the other way. Mm. And we need it to swing a little bit back more toward the center so our kids can feel what it feels like to suck it up and to work hard and to do difficult things and to have pride in accomplishing difficult things and developing the habits of working hard.
Right. How did you get into teaching in the first place?
Well, that's an interesting thing. You know, I was a young man, and I was, I guess you could say, kind of recruited to be a wrestling coach. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. You know, there I am, a young man, coaching wrestling and sharing with these kids my love and passion and my expertise and my skills and knowledge. And I am loving every second of it. You know, and I'm in college, and a few more years go by, and I'm getting ready to graduate college, and I'm just like, man, I got to make up my mind. What am I going to do here for work? You know? And I'm like, I guess I could go into Hartford, because during those years, JC, Hartford was the insurance capital of the world. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I guess I could go into Hartford and maybe get a job there. I said, but I'll be working to 5 or 6 o'clock at night there. So I guess I could kiss, you know, coaching goodbye. And I was coaching football too. Mm. So I'm like, I could kiss coaching goodbye, which I'm like, but this is the thing in my life that I really love right now. And I'm like, so what am I going to do? And then I found out that a few of my buddies that I went to high school with that I hadn't seen in a few years, I found out that they were teachers and they were coaching also. So I was like, you know, just right away, just freaking hit me. I said, if I want to continue to coach wrestling and coach football, then it only makes sense to, you know, become, let's say, a high school teacher. But I got to tell you, JC, I mean, I wasn't like pumped up about being that, you know?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember how kids are, a lot of kids are just not pumped up about being in the classroom, you know? I mean, they join sports because that's something they love to do, and they volunteer to do that, whether it's sports or drama or band or whatever it may be. But like, you know, school's compulsory and, you know, we force them to do it. So I wasn't pumped up about being a teacher, but to me, it made sense. I had to go in the classroom and be a teacher and to continue to do what I love doing, which is coaching. And I got to tell you, JC, the first few years was really hard because I didn't enjoy teaching. And the only thing that got me through teaching was what I was doing after school, you know, with the athletes. And mm-hmm. That carried me through the first few years. But thankfully, I was able to figure out how to transition, you know, my love and passion for what I was doing on the sports field and sports mats into the classroom. And now I've had a lot of years of just getting kids pumped up in the classroom, almost like we were on a wrestling mat or on a football field or, you know, or whatever, basketball court. And I have that ability now to get my kids pumped up in the classroom and to have my kids really, really enjoy being in my classroom, even to the point, JC, where sometimes I ask kids how their day's going, and they go, oh, come on, mister. You know this is the only class I go to. <You know>?
That's awesome. Well, and, you know, it kind of just brings it back to the fact that, you know, you're different than a lot of your, you know, colleagues, I would say, because there's just, at least in what I'm familiar with here in Indiana, you know, we have some charter schools, we have some magnet schools, we have, you know, my old high school, which has changed quite a bit since I've been there. Mm-hmm. And even the special classrooms, like the art and the music and, you know, the PE to an extent. They've all kind of gone into a classroom thing, which back in our day, that was how you couldn't even think about doing that. So one of the things I find fascinating about your career as a teacher is that you were actually chosen by the AFTCT as the face and voice of educational reform. And, you know, in my circles here in Indiana, you know, I can think of maybe a handful of entrepreneurs or past teachers I know that are starting their own academies, like we were talking about in the beginning of the conversation. Dr. Pingnan Chi, he's doing a Puema Institute here in Indy. And then even on the podcast, I've talked to a couple of people who are starting their own things. Antonio Smith, back in session 134. Listen to that one. That's a good one. But, you know, all these schools have life skills as the forefront of what they're teaching their students. And, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, it's being a major component as is leadership. And so as in, this is my personal favorite, teaching them to be the best version of themselves and not another cog in the machine. They're striving to create what Dr. Ping calls education 3.0. And essentially it's when you're moving away from the traditional classroom format and going back to a more master and apprentice situation, but at a much more massive scale. And these are all great and maybe pie in the sky sort of ideas, but what do you think that we do in the meantime? Where do you see yourself fitting into all of this?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, it is a tough job today being a classroom teacher or school administrator. And we need to do something different than what we're doing right now because our kids are coming into school. They're not school ready. You know, they're coming in. And, we're trying to teach them, and many of them are like reluctant learners or resistant learners, or even sometimes, beyond resistant. You know, they're just outright flagrant conduct. You know, I'm not going to do this, and I don't like you, so, you know, go F yourself or whatever. And they get up and walk out of the classroom. I mean, this is not uncommon for this sort of thing to happen. You know what I'm saying? So we have to really, really go back to, I think, teaching the whole child. We've got too far. I think the pendulum swung too far where, you know, they said, well, these kids and focus on getting the test grades, you know, and all that. And I'm just like, oh, there's nobody that in the Asian schools out in China and Japan and, you know, Asia. And I go, and yet they're coming over here to check out our schools and see how, you know, these American cowboys, these American entrepreneurs, how they think outside the box and how their schools are different than just test taking. And there we are, you know, giving up what makes us Americans one of our strongest traits and trying to focus on just getting better test scores. I'm like, what are we, insane? You know what I'm saying? Right. We should be focusing on building relationships with these kids and getting these kids socially, emotionally charged up and socially, emotionally competent. You know, we should be teaching them Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, financial literacy, entrepreneurial skills.
Love it. Yeah.
You know, I always tell my kids, dude, I'm fine. You start off as an employee, you know, and work your 9-to-5 job, but get up early in the morning, you know, work late at night, weekends, holidays, summers, and build your business on the side. You know, do what you love to do and build that little business, you know, make a hobby into a business where you can bring in an extra income stream and you can diversify your income streams. You know, have a little bit more security in life. You know, invest in the stock market. Learn how to do that. Learn how to start a stock market. You know, how to start a business. And, you know, write a book. Get royalties. You know, you guys love to do poems. They can do poems. Do your artwork. You love to rap or do music. Do that stuff. Mm-hmm. Figure out how to create royalties, how to run a business, and how to make multiple streams of income. And I'm like, that's what we're going to do. You know, get on, become competent on social media. You know, learn how to use good business language, good English language. You know, write a book. You know, do these sort of things. Because that's where, you know, where we're going. And our schools have to step up. And our schools have to figure out how to start doing this. Now, I spend time, JC, talking to my students about these things all the time. But there really isn't a real good structure in place to make these things happen.
And it's good that you have that freedom because it's been about 8 years since I suddenly lost my mom to a heart attack. And, you know, she was an award-winning art teacher for 30 years. And, when I think about it, you know, she had a lot in her mind when she passed. And one of those things was the pressure on her to conform to being more of a classroom teacher by her administration. And since then, I've seen several of my best teachers walk away from the profession because things have changed again so much. Yeah. Friends who I went to college with, who have become teachers right out of school, have already resigned from the classroom.
Yep.
And even in my own personal experience teaching at the college level, I actually taught when I was a grad, as a grad instructor when I was getting my master's, and also I taught junior level or junior college. And yep. I saw how the institution was focused on putting instructors in their place and having them teach one topic and only that topic. Life skills were secondary, even though I thought that they were needed. But yeah. I'm glad to see that you, congratulations,
yeah.
you have, it sounds like you have more freedom to do. Do you think that public schools are realizing how bad things are getting, or do you have an uphill battle?
Well, it's definitely an uphill battle. I mean, I think right now, I believe I read somewhere within the last year that the average lifespan of a teacher is only 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the public doesn't realize this. The public doesn't realize that teachers are getting hammered in the classroom on every end. You know, they're standing in front of 30, 32, 33 kids on many days, you know, 5, 6 classes possibly, and they get these kids that are maybe reluctant learners at best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all of them, of course. Some of them are wonderful kids and fired up, but you get so many of those reluctant learners or just outright defiant kids, and then you're getting boxed in by your administrators, and you're getting squeezed many times by your board of ed, by your administrators, and they're making you feel like you have no autonomy. They're making you feel like you're a cog in a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you don't really matter, that you're replaceable, you know, and it doesn't get any better for the administrators. I mean, I remember one time sitting in an administrative meeting where I heard a school superintendent going, the senior administrator in this district, and it was a big district, you know, the senior administrator in this district has 3 years seniority, you know, and she had all the administrators in the whole district walking on eggshells, you know. So how are they going to be able to be at their best and use their creative genius to create a better school district if they're constantly worried about being fired by somebody who's boxing them in and making them toe the line every single second of the day? And, I mean, just what the educational world was turned into is crazy. And then, you know, you call parents and you say, I'm trying to get your kid to do this. And the parents are like, you know, whatever, that's not my responsibility. It's yours. Responsibility.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah, you're like, oh, or you get like another parent, you know, that's breathing down your back the whole time and won't let you do what you got to do with the kid to get the kid to suck it up, you know, to do the kid what the kid's supposed to do. So, I mean, with the lifespan being 3 years right now, the average lifespan of a teacher, and then with them trying to like systematize everything that's going on, I'm really worried that the educational system, and I say this gently, the educational system is, I know they spend a lot of money, I know they're trying to save money, but I'm really, really concerned that what they're doing is they're trying to systematize everything to such a degree that they no longer need really good teachers. They can just bring in some young kid with a bachelor's and say, here are the steps. This is what you say the 9th minute into the class. This is what you say the 12th minute into the class, you know, and so on, the 22nd minute, the 39th minute, you know, here's your script. This is what you say. You know, I mean, people out there, you know, may realize or may not realize, but the bottom line is that, you know, teenagers run a multi-billion dollar McDonald's system. So there's, you know, very smart business people out there that say, well, why can't we do something similar like that with schools and try to get, you know, run like, have like, you know, the bottom, well, I hate to say the bottom of the barrel, JC, but you know where I'm going with this. You know, young bachelors, you know, we don't pay them much. They're not that qualified. They're not going to be the best teachers. They're not going to have like a creative genius in the classroom. They're just going to follow a script for little pay and they're going to save money in the educational system by trying to do some kind of system. And I don't, that's not the way we need to go.
Right. Right.
You know, we need to be creatively genius with our students. We need to have amazing teachers in there, and we need to give them some latitude so they can work the different angles, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Of being able to teach these kids what they need to know and you know, to succeed in the future. And we need to have a system maybe in place that helps them mm-hmm. do that stuff instead of handcuffing them and not allowing them to do anything. And that's where we're at right now. And that's one of the biggest reasons why teachers are only lasting about 3 years right now, because teachers feel helpless. You know, they feel like they've been any ability they have to make any change and to do really good work is being like taken away from them. They're being boxed in and handcuffed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big problem that our educational systems have. And there's no easy solution for this, JC.
Not at all. Have you heard of the School Sucks Project?
I don't think I have. Maybe you can fill me in real quick.
Dude, look it up. This guy has been a teacher. He's been an administration guy. And I this was several years back when he started this entire thing. But it's a podcast that has mini series on like different topics within the podcast. And then, I mean, it's just kind of all over the place. But it's all about school reform. I think you would...
Cool.
Get a lot out of it, actually.
Yeah, I definitely will. And I got to tell you, I've been very lucky. You see, I've been an inner city school teacher for like a little over 20 years now. And in my first few years, I wanted to quit every single day. But I've gotten a lot better at what I do. And I run such a dynamic classroom mm-hmm. that my bosses, and I have many of them, but my bosses have like recognized my talents. And they've given me some leeway because I'm really, really good at what I do. And
go.
I'm really, really good at getting my students engaged and passionate about their education and seeing the bigger picture. And like I said, they've given me leeway. And many times, you know, my bosses have pretty much have said, hey, you know, you've done a great job here. You know, now we need you over here, man. You know what I'm saying? Over here, we're hurting. And we need somebody like you to get in there. So in some ways, I've become like a little bit of the Bill Parcells of education.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
Where they pulled me out of one place and say, you've done a great job. Now we're hurting over here. We need you to get over there and like see what you can do. Rebuild, you know, over there. And, you know, a little football analogy with Bill Parcells.
Right.
Back then, you know, you're going to be a little bit older, I guess, to understand that. The youngins today may not get that one.
Well, he has a great coaching tree underneath him. I was noticing they were talking about Bill one of the games I was watching last weekend, and yeah, he has some pretty talented coaches underneath him in today's NFL world. So, find those coaches out, guys, and look up Bill Parcells. Good dude.
Yeah, no doubt.
As far as the thought leader world, because you're out there speaking, you've written books. Let's kind of go into those books. And I mentioned this in the intro. You're the author of several at this point. And in mm-hmm. fact, your students actually wanted you to write them to help others outside of your classroom. And you have two fictional and two academic books. Let's talk about the two fictional ones first. How did you finally get the inspiration to start writing them? And when did you know it was time?
Oh, JC, this is such a great story. Here I am. I'm a teacher, and I'm maybe 5 years in, six, seven, whatever it is. And I got my teachers, not my students, because I'm getting better and better at what I do. So now I've got my students now a few times a year. They're saying, Mister, they go, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had. And they're like, you should write a book. And I always said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm like, that's not for me. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm a terrible writer. I'm not that smart. And I wouldn't even know how to write a book. And so, yeah, no thanks. You know? So this started happening, you know, maybe a few times a year. And then it started happening, you know, every year it was going on. So I got my students, and I got new students every year, JC. So every year I got these students coming up to me several times a year saying, Mister, you're the most inspirational teacher I've ever had. You should write a book. And I'm always going, thanks, but no thanks. You know, you're very sweet, all that. Thank you. I appreciate it, but no thanks. And Now, as the years are going on, this went on for about 10 years, JC, and as the years are going on, it's becoming more and more frequent that they're asking me.
Because they want to take you with them.
Maybe. So I'm thinking, holy cow, maybe they're seeing something I'm not. And maybe I should start putting my trust in them the way I've been asking them to put their trust in me. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to write this book. And, you know, and the thing that like nailed it, that nailed the coffin there, I guess, sorry, maybe that's the wrong analogy, but the thing that sprung the door open for me was that on one of these days, I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And I'm driving home and a buddy of mine who lives in Florida called me, and he's like, and this, you know, this guy, everything he touches turns to gold. So he says, hey, Dan, I'm going to write a book. And I'm like, absolutely, you definitely should, man. And, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, guys like my buddy Dave here, guys like Dave write books. You know, he's the type of guy, you know, write books, but you know, the guys like me probably don't. So, you know, I mentioned to him, I said, hey, you're not going to believe him, but one of my students told me today I should write one. And he goes, absolutely, Dan. He goes, I've known you for a long time. You got some good stuff to share. You absolutely should write a book. And I got to tell you, JC, I was speechless. Because now for the first time, it wasn't coming from my students. It was coming from an adult that I highly respected.
Right.
And I started saying, you know, my students are asking me and he's saying it. It's got to be there. There's got to be something there. So that was it. So the next morning, I set my alarm clock for 4 a.m., got up and started writing a book. And a year later, there I was holding my first book in my hand going, holy crap, it worked. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I got a book. And it was just amazing. I didn't think anybody would like it or anybody want it, anybody buy it. But I was wrong. People love it. Mm. You know, and people buy it all the time. So I thank my students, you know, and I thank Dave. And it's just, you know, it just goes to show you the power of just like trying to help people and the power of trusting people when they're seeing something that maybe you're not. Right. You know, so I'm eternally grateful.
What have you learned as you wrote the two fiction books?
Oh, I've learned so much. I got to tell you this, JC, I've learned to continue to work extremely hard because there's a lot of work that goes into the books. The other thing I've learned is to enjoy the grind, you know, which I think I always have.
Embrace the suck. That's what I hear when you say that.
Yeah, no doubt. The other thing I've learned, and this is also very powerful, is that I've learned that I do have something to say and something valuable to say. So something very, very worthwhile that people should listen to. So I think an incredible thing that I've learned is that I found my voice through writing and through speaking. You know, I found my voice and then I learned that I can write, you know, and I've learned that it's great to network with people. And I've learned that I'm a lot smarter than I thought I was. And I've learned that it's great to help people and it's great to be passionate. And I've learned that it's awesome to put yourself out there. Mm. And I mean, I'm out there every day in some way between my writing and speaking. And I got people calling me or reaching out to me all the time, JC, saying, I would love to meet you for a cup of coffee. And I do it. You know, I go out, I meet people a couple times a week for a cup of coffee on my way home from teaching. And, you know, it's just a quick, like, whatever, 45-minute stop, cup of coffee, get to know this person, talk to this person, and then I'm on my way. And I got to tell you, I mean, my friends and my coworkers think I'm crazy, you know, having cups of coffee a couple times a week with complete strangers. But I'm putting myself out there. And if a cup of coffee can help this person somehow have a life that's even one iota better, then it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing. So I believe in that synergy, and I believe in putting yourself out there, and I believe in giving it all you got and helping out as much as you can. And, you know, and you really do have the power to make this world a better place if you're willing to maybe wear yourself out instead of sit on the couch and rust yourself out, you know?
Right. What is the one takeaway that you want your audience to learn from those books?
Yeah, there's so many of them, but I would say the biggest one is I think that all my books encourage people to just try, you know, just try. And from there, you find, even if you fall flat on your face, You know, you figure your eyeballs are about 5 feet more forward or 6 feet more forward, you know, if you fall flat on your face. And from there, your view is a little teeny bit better than it was 5 or 6 feet back. And who knows what you might see from that viewpoint of falling flat on your face and being 5 or 6 feet more forward than you just were. You know, so just try. And you'd be surprised what you can see and what doors open eventually when you just try and just keep trying.
Awesome. Awesome. You've also written two academic books. You want to tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, absolutely. See, one of the things I do is I try everything I can to help our youth have a better tomorrow. So as we said, I mean, I've already written fiction books, teen leadership books to help them. And then I wrote the educational books to help educators, because educators spend a lot of time with our students. And one of the things I do is one of them is evaluate and professional development. I wrote it sort of like the college professor type of book. So it's evaluate and professional development, because I mean, how do school districts know, or high schools, even just high schools, how do they know if what they're doing to develop their teachers are really working? And and they need to have the best teachers possible so that those teachers can get in those classrooms and do the best job as possible developing our youth. The other educational book I have is it's all on social emotional skills to help teachers or educators develop social emotional learning for our kids out there, because our kids are lacking the social emotional learning, and it's very, very important that they build that. They need that to succeed, and they don't have it. So I'm trying to help educators do that. And JC, if I could put a quick plug in real quick, I also have three parenting books that I'm working on right now, because it's important that somebody helps parents, because once parents become more able, more knowledgeable, more capable, then they too will do a better job of helping our youth have a better tomorrow. So like, I'm kind of underneath that big umbrella, JC, where I help our youth, but I'm also helping the people that help our youth better help our youth,
right?
You know, such as the educators and the parents. And I'm branching out, you know, a couple of other ways from there as well, with businesses and even speakers. I'm doing some of that. But I mean, I'm having a great time trying to make tomorrow a better world for our youth.
Cool.
And the main, I guess the main message is just try. Just try.
You already mentioned the three parental books, but what else has got you excited for the rest of the year and beyond?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I've got so many things right now in the works. So I've got two professional speakers, books on why authors should speak, because a lot of authors are shy introverts sometimes. But the thing is, they're shy. They like to write.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, unfortunately, hide behind the pen or hide behind the computer screen with the writing. And a lot of them have great messages. And I'm trying to encourage them to get their message out there in a bigger, better way by not just writing, but by also speaking and becoming a professional speaker. And that will help them get their message out there. Now, a lot of academias, a lot of teachers, a lot of people in the educational world, you know, they're very good at writing and doing that sort of thing, but they're not that great at speaking because they're, you know, they're shy or timid about getting out there and speaking. So I'm trying to help them, you know, to get their message out in a better way, in a bigger way. So I got two speaking books that will be coming out within hopefully the next 6 months or so. Three of the parenting books that will be coming out hopefully by the end of the summer. I've got another academia book on how to become more successful with difficult students. It should be out by January 1st. And I'm very pumped up about that one. That one's built on a workshop that I do for the American Federation of Teachers on how to become more successful and difficult students. I'm co-writing a book with a paraprofessional educator of the year on how teachers and paraeducators can work more efficiently and effectively in the classroom. So I'm pretty pumped up about that. That'll be out probably in about a year or maybe a year and a half. And I've got this incredible football book that I'm working on right now on a great, great underdog story about how a town 30 years ago took a group of boys and brought them through a football system that made them tougher and more confident in themselves and built character and helped them win or pull off one of the biggest upsets in Connecticut football history in the last 50 years to win a state championship title that they had no right winning. And at the same time, a large part of the boys from that town, which is East Hartford, Connecticut, went over to the next town over to play for the Catholic school. And that Catholic school, which was loaded with East Hartford boys as well, also won a state championship that same year with those same East Hartford boys that all grew up playing football together in the youth league that housed five youth football teams while those boys were growing up. Mm. Now that town only has one youth football team, and they're just developing a second one right now, which I'm glad they're doing that. But it's sad that the town, you know, lost most of their football mojo. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's very sad. So, and I got a couple screenplays that I'm working on right now as well. One is on my team leadership book, and one is on a football story that I'm doing. So I've got so many things, JC, that are out there that are pumping me up and encouraging me and keeping me motivated to keep doing all the good stuff I'm doing and to run 110 miles an hour. So I don't see me stopping anytime soon because I just got too much good stuff in me that I need to get out there and share.
Cool. And it sounds like the book machines, you have that figured out. So that's cool. It's because you went from what? One book in a year to have a multiple on the way out right now.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. I could have like 10 books out in the next like a few years, you know, which is amazing. So I'm very pumped about that. And of course, you know, JC, also, you know, I'm a professional speaker, so I do keynote speeches and, you know, around my schedule.
Right.
I got five kids, so they come first.
Right.
You know, so I do that, but around my schedule, I do that. So, you know, I'm I guess you could say in many ways, I'm living the dream, JC.
For sure.
I really am.
Going back to the East Hartford group there, one of the reasons why youth football has been fading off quickly, I think, is because of the concussions, right? Have you heard of the Q collar yet?
Yes, but I am drawing a blank.
The Q collar is a little collar, a freestanding collar that you just wrap around your neck. And what it does is it gives the wearer the same elasticity in their blood vessels that a woodpecker has in hitting a tree, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So it constricts the blood, and therefore it keeps your brain from rocking as much when it hits the field.
Interesting.
Look into it. It's called a Q collar. I think
I've heard of it before, but I didn't know all the details.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Going into the rapid fire questions, the first question is, who are three influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
Well, when I was younger, I did a lot of reading of Tony Robbins.
Mm.
So, like, I loved Tony Robbins stuff. I did a lot of reading with Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And another big one for me was Teddy Roosevelt. Sometimes people laugh at that. They're like, really, Teddy Roosevelt? And I'm like, listen, I'm a history teacher.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a special education teacher and a history teacher. So I've done a lot of reading on Teddy Roosevelt and his can-do attitude.
Right.
Well, not so. Definitely Teddy Roosevelt. And a third one I would say is, you know, there's a Brendan Burchard on The Golden Ticket.
Yes.
I remember reading his book. I loved his book and Millionaire Mindset. And he's got a few others that I've really enjoyed. I mean, you know, I almost hate to leave it to three because there's so many of them I'm reading like every day. You know, I got like 1,000 books in my pocket on my iPhone.
Right.
So I'm reading all the time, but just off the top of my head, those three just jump right out at me. And there's so many, many more.
Right. Oh, that's good. It's good. What's something that you've been learning about recently that you're excited to implement?
Well, I got to tell you, like, I'm an educator and I'm not in the business world. So for me, the whole marketing thing is kind of foreign to me. Like, I just thought like I'd write a book and everybody would buy it. Right.
Right.
Sort of like I thought I would graduate from college and the phone would start ringing and everybody give me a job. Well, that didn't work out. You know what I'm saying? So So now, you know, I've written a few books and I'm like, you mean I got to market these things? You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So I've been learning a lot about marketing lately. I'm always, you know, I got at least one book on my phone all times on some kind of marketing. And it's, I'd say it's another whole fascinating world out there, marketing. I'm enjoying reading about it. And I know like a lot of authors go, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I just want to write books. And, you know, like maybe marketing's below me, or maybe I feel uncomfortable and I don't want to do it because it scares me. But for me, I'm like, anytime I learn something new, I think that's awesome. So for me, marketing's a whole new world for me. And I'm like, you know, slowly learning that around everything else. And I enjoy learning it. So I'm good with that.
Love it. Love it. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Oh boy, that's a good one. What's improved last 5 years? I almost hesitate to use this one, but I think I'm going to use it anyways. You know, you remember the Christmas thing, the Christmas special, the Little Drummer Boy?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always loved the Little Drummer Boy because here was like a little boy that had like nothing, you know, he had nothing. And he shows up at the manger for Jesus Christ and he plays his best. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's all he has. He has nothing but his ability to just try to play his best. So he plays his best. And when I was growing up, JC, I felt for many, many, many years that I had nothing. And that all I could do was just play my best in football and then wrestling. And it really, really paid off for me. And then, you know, then I transferred that to other places, you know, to play my best in college and to play my best in the classroom as a teacher. And now what I do is I try to get my students to play their best. I mean, they come into my classroom every day and they have to tap this little logo at the door that says, play like a champion, you know, give your best. And they have to tap it on the going out of my classroom too. And I say in the last 5 years, I've been watching my students more and more and more who have like nothing, so many of them. And if I can just get them to play their best, and if I can just get them to believe in just playing their best, you know, with whatever that may be right now, and at some point they'll be able to transfer that over to other realms in their life, and they'll be able to play the best there too, then that their lives are going to be okay, and that they're going to be able to go on and become good people, good parents, and good contributors to society by just playing their best.
Love it. What is something you believed as a 35-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is completely inaccurate, and why?
Oh, I got to tell you, when I was in my 20s and even early 30s, I was such an athlete that I physically thought that I could do anything and that I could keep on anything on my own, that I had the stamina, the strength, the speed to pretty much do anything I wanted, overcome anything I want, you know, run a marathon, break another bench press record, whatever it may be, that I could just physically, I could do anything I wanted on my own. And I never saw that like ending. So now I know that that's such a falsehood. And now that I'm, you know, much older, I'm 48 now, going on 49, getting close to 50. And you know what? I know these days I need help. You know, I need help. I can't do everything myself. I don't have to be that macho man cowboy. I need help, and I'm willing to accept help these days.
Yeah, yeah. And truth be told, I was going through that whole Superman syndrome thing myself when I was starting New Inceptions here. And yeah, the more that you bring other people into it and collaborate, and as opposed to compete with everybody, you're going to be living a lot happier, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
What does it mean to live a life of abundance?
I think you're living a life of abundance, JC, when every day you're just trying to become a little bit better of a person than you were yesterday. You're not competing with others. You're competing with yourself. To maybe be a little bit, for me, it would be a little bit better of a man than I was yesterday. You know? And if I'm that, then I'm living a life of abundance. There's no doubt about it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Dan, thank you so much, man. It's been a true pleasure, and we had a lot of, we could have been on this forever, but you know, got to keep it to an hour show. But people can find you at danblanchard.net, and where can they find you on the socials?
Oh, I'm everywhere. I'm on Facebook. You'll see me. Just Google Dan Blanchard. You'll see me everywhere. Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, Google Plus, you name it, I'm there. So you'll have no trouble finding me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure.
Wonderful talking with you, JC. Thank you.
So there you have it, guys. As someone who has, you know, a lot of interest in education reform, I'm encouraged by what Daniel is doing, and I'm glad that he's been able to stick in there and make as much of impact as he has over the 20 years that he's been teaching, especially when you think about how short the average teacher is in the profession. I hope that more administrations see what he's doing and bring him in to help, because there's a lot of need there. If you want to connect with him yourself, I'll have his contact information available in the show notes via newinceptions.com/136. And in the show note extras, there are several videos of his that you can check out. The first of him is one where he's interviewed by Teresa DeFore of Connecticut Style about his book, Granddaddy Secrets. And then I have a friend of his, Jeff Davis, reviewing two of his books. One is called The Storm, and the second one called A Sprint to the Top. If you like what you've heard so far and want to see Dan in action, then I have a short video of him speaking in front of the Hartford Springfield Speakers Network. The speech is called We're Here for a Reason, Not a Season. And finally, if you really want to take the conversation to the next level, there's an hour session with Rachel Orchard about takeaways and leadership that he's learned and his experience in the classroom. So with that said, guys, that's it for session 136. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with Daniel and I today. We really appreciate you listening in. And don't forget, if you want real practical advice and starting an online business with courses, community, and weekly coaching, then give Fizzle a shot. Get your first month free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. So until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating, and we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.